I think one of the things that's, you know, really fascinated me about this particular reading is how you can have two totally different perspectives from the same story happening at the same time. In this story, you have the perspective from Judah and the perspective from Tamar, and how those two things meet is really quite interesting. So I think one of the things I just wanted to sort of highlight is the idea that we aren't all one or the other. That's something we've got to constantly remind ourselves about. You know, we're dealing with states, and the states are multiple and nuanced, you know, in ways that we have no idea about. We are only dealing with the general ideas. So we easily fall into identifying with one state as being us and the other state not, or however that plays out, because we are in generals, and that's, you know, that's the level of our thinking. So there has to be a pulling back and an understanding that Judah represents certain states, and as does Tamar, but they are also in every state. So it's not, you know, we're talking about, you know, a dynamic and living, moving thing in terms of these states. They're not static things. So when we're in a state of Judah, which really is wanting the Lord on our own terms, our proprium's terms is probably a better way of putting it, then Tamar comes. The Lord still arrives at looking for a way of preserving what needs to be preserved until the divine human is revealed. So if you look at all the rituals and sacrifices and temple worship and all of those things, they are the veil which Tamar wore. And it's not until the Lord comes that those things are removed and we see the reality for what it is. So, and we're going to cycle through that time and time and time again. With every single state we go through, the same dynamics play out. And so when the proprium wants to use the interior things to its own ends, then Tamar is treated as a harlot, seen as something illegitimate, if you like, which was to all appearances how the Lord appeared when in the womb of Mary. It appears illegitimate to the natural man. Spiritual things always appear unlawful, because it's going to impact on the natural man in a way that the natural man doesn't want it to. So it's just remembering that, as shocking as things may appear in the letter, from an interior perspective, you're looking at the Lord's mercy playing out. That's what's happening. This is love and mercy in the only form we're capable of receiving it. So that's why the stories as they are. All right. So the first principle here is that it's about preservation. It's about the preservation of the things of the church, albeit in a very exterior kind of form, until the state is such that interior things can be opened. That's what's going on in the story. So if we hold that, then what we begin to see is how these things actually start to play out. And, you know, the Lord is not, or the internal sense of the word is not interested in our agendas and aspirations and all of those things, or our organization's aspirations. You know, those things are necessary things to hold something more interior. But at the end of the day, this is about, you know, inner work is about the reorganization of the spiritual world, essentially. That's really what's going on, about the organization of goods and truths into a form whereby the Lord as love and wisdom can be more fully present with the human race. So it's much bigger than us as individuals, but the Lord gives it to us as individuals, and he allows us to have our personal aspirations, our national aspirations, even whatever level you want to take it at, because if he didn't allow us those things, we would have nothing to do with anything of a spiritual nature at all. So while from a more exterior perspective, the, you know, so if we come back to what's in the letter about the Jewish church and its rituals, I mean, they loved their rituals. They loved all that because it aligned with their national aspiration, and gave them a sense of being special and all of that sort of thing. It was necessary in order to preserve what was interior, because those things represented and corresponded, although they had no idea they did, and they weren't interested. So from the letter, we get this idea that when we're in states, I can think about it in terms of my fundamentalist Christian days, where you hold up the letter of the word as something is holy, which it is. But the problem is that it was holy in itself, not for the use it served. And the use that it serves, of course, is to deliver what is internal. But there's no desire to enter into internal things, because that requires self-examination, acknowledging your evils as sins, all of that side of things, whereas it's much better to just be in those exterior things and not have to do that kind of stuff. So while the exteriors are dominating over the interiors can't be seen. But as soon as there is a movement towards what is interior, then the Lord opens the word and there's a path that appears through the sea, as it were, of dry ground, which one can then begin to enter into more interior things. I mean, this is the sort of the principle that works. We only are capable of receiving what we're capable of receiving, and the Lord is not going to give us anything more than what we can receive. And that's because spiritual laws are in place that ensure that is actually the case. You know, so there's a lot in this story that is really about our struggle. You know, like, so when we are in a state of not knowing what good and truth is, what's required in a situation, then put on the garments that present a semblance of truth, because that at least we've got some understanding of something. And then as we do that, some form of conjunction can occur. Now, it mightn't be a conjugal conjunction, but at least it will have the token of a promise of something, which is the kerchief and the staff and that sort of thing. So it's all in here, it's all woven in here, our experience of engaging with the text, even, you know, like we come to the text, we get caught up in the exteriors of it, that's sort of looking at it perhaps more of a kind of Judah perspective, but the Lord sends forth Tamar, she's still present and waiting for things to be restored into their proper order. So from Tamar's perspective, according to ancient church law, she was of order. Judah was out of order. And he saw her as a harlot. The Lord sees her as a bride. And so, you know, and these two things play out simultaneously. And that's the incredible thing about the word. It's actually opening us to being able to see something of our state.